not going to go through every or read every slide. I'm just going to kind of go through this and then let you guys answer, or sorry, ask questions. I'll answer them. So my name is Andy Newton, and I'm with VeriSign Labs, and Leslie Daigle sitting next to me. She's also VeriSign. So we've been working with the IETF and the CRISP working group on this thing called, on this protocol called IRIS. So to clarify some of the messages that are going out, the working group name is CRISP. The actual protocol, the work product of the working group is called IRIS. Page 2 of the thing, of the slide deck. I'd like to talk a minute about the term who is. I'm not sure if it's relevant for this group, because I think the Who Is Task Force probably understands the term, but just so we're all on the same page. Who is actually means different things.
Hi, this is Barbara.
Barbara,
hi.
Hi, Barbara. This is Andy. I've already started going through the presentation. Is that okay?
Yes, that's perfect. Sorry for being late. I'll put myself on mute.
Okay. Thanks. Barbara, I'm on page 2, by the way. So I just started. Who is means different things to different people. To a lot of technical people, who is actually the protocol that runs over port 43, which is defined by RFC 954. However, it has a different meaning if you're talking to people setting policy. WHOIS generally means the metadata around domains. So there are two different terms that get kind of mixed between each other. So what is port 43? That's a question that comes up a lot. Port 43 is the name WHOIS protocol, defined by RFC 954. It's a very, 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 very old protocol. It was first described in RFC 812, and to give you an idea of how old that is, that actually predates IPv4, so pretty old. Moving on to slide 3. So essentially, this protocol, which really doesn't define much,
redefining what RFC 954 says, and basically it's going to take out all that
you have to be on MailNet, you have to have certain NTP hosts and all these other things, which absolutely no longer apply to almost anybody in the world today. So, there have also been a couple of drafts written about SRVs and who is, but those are the intent of the ITF now has is that these things are maybe informational, but they're not standard. And there should be more focus put on cohabitation between the new Irish protocol and backwards compatibility with who is, if they're going to do that. And we can get into more of that later. So, where do we get Iris from? This is page 6. Iris is a text-based, XML-based protocol, and the XML itself provides all the structure and data modeling, and that essentially is what gives us a lot of the power that we can separate out different types of TLD models and so forth. It allows for tagging, for internationalization, localization. The queries are strongly defined, and there's query distribution that's strongly defined in there. And so we've actually looked a lot about what we can do with directory service and information service protocols and put it into this to figure out what we actually need. So essentially, Iris is a new protocol of learning from the lessons of the past 20 years. The protocol itself is policy neutral. Access can be anonymous or it can be authenticated, depending on who's running the server, how they want to do it. Support tiered access. The trust can be locally, regionally, or globally distributed. Doesn't matter. Information can be centralized, decentralized. It can be centrally indexed, distributed. It really depends on how the policy is set up and how it can be operated. So the protocol itself doesn't dictate any policy. But what it does do is allow policymakers to come up with it's more tools for them to refine their policies than you know everyone has it or nobody has it, which is essentially what we have today. On page 8. So one of the things that's built into Iris is the understanding of being able to have navigate from one server to the other. First, there's being able to find the correct server that you need to get to. Secondly, if that server doesn't have the information, but it knows where that information is stored, it has very strong types for doing query distribution and for relaying information in those queries. We call those relay backs on the protocol. It also has very structured queries and very structured results. Like I said, it supports tiered access. So this gives you the ability to control who gets the information, and it's not an all or nothing type thing. So you can give some users, like anonymous users, just very minimal stuff, while you can give other authenticated users different types of data, and there can be different levels of authentication and so forth. I do want to point out, I'm on page 10, by the way, that there's a difference between authentication and authorization. So authentication is how you identify a user who's accessing the system, and then authorization are the access policies that you apply against the authenticated user. What this does mean is that you have authentication mechanisms that facilitate the authorization. So that's a very important concept to understand. In modern authentication, we now have the protocol uses a modern mechanism called SAFL, which is essentially a pluggable framework for doing authentication. And you can do things like passwords, you can do one-time passwords, digital certificates. We even have a referral model that allows you to pass information in a referral, and that can be authentication information or authorization information. What this does is allows you to have more authorization schemes. So you can base your authorization on whether you actually know who the user is, how many times the user has actually accessed the system. You can base it on not whether you know who the user is, but you trust someone that does know the user. You can do it on the type of user versus who the person is. You can do it on time base, or you can do it based on who sent that user to your server. One of the other things that the protocol helps with is the distribution of authentication. And there are multiple methods that can do this. Sometimes one of the issues when you have a lot of servers out there and they all have to have this authentication, the data authorization or seamless authentication and authorization to the end user. So when they, so if they have access to, within a jurisdiction, if they have access to one system, they get the same kind of access to another. One of the problems of that is that you have to maintain these different authentication lists. And there are different, there are definitely ways to help alleviate that. One is with digital certificates, you can establish chains of trust. As I said before, you don't actually have to know who the user is. You may trust someone who vouches for the user themselves. You can do it based on attributes that the user has that are cryptographically assigned to that user, such as whether they're a law enforcement or whatnot. So you don't necessarily have to know immediately who the user is. And that helps with not having to send around long lists of person has this type of access, this person has this type of access, and the synchronization issues that come up with it. One of the other things, again, is that the protocol has these things called relay bags and referrals. A unique mechanism in IRIS is kind of similar to HTTP slippage, but not the same. But what it allows you to do is it allows you to actually send along authentication information in there. And you can even, if you wanted to, send authorization policy in there. So the authorization doesn't have to be, the authorization policy can be centrally administered if need be. And of course, again, it's all up to the policy of the system. I'm on page 14. So what does the structure, the XML structure, give us? Well, it allows us to define the queries, allows us to find the results. Everyone understands what's going on there. Data is all normalized, and these are fairly basic rules to well-known data modeling standards. But this allows us to represent multiple different types of TLD structures without in the same type of data model. For internationalization, which is also something that the structure gives us, it allows you to have well-known tags, and those tags can then be localized by a client for the language of the user. It doesn't have to be done on the server side anymore. The other thing structure does is it allows you to create a lot more advanced clients. So, and I'm on page 15. What this is actually a picture, a screenshot of one of the clients that we created here in our research. And essentially what it allows you to do is allows the user to take this information and find it in a graphical form. And this application is something the user does. And if they don't like the way it shows up, they can change the application. Or if they need some sort of special need on going through the data, it's all up to their client to get that done. And they don't have to be dependent on the server operators to do this for them anymore. So essentially, it allows gives a lot more power to the user while keeping them within the bounds of the policy that's been set up. IRIS is a layered protocol. So there are clear lines of responsibility in each layer. This allows for extensibility and for future need of switching components in and out if we need or adding components. So there's a registry specific layer which talks about domains, and we're also the RIRs on domain address registry, and there may be more to come. There's a common layer on how to talk about the different interests of the registry types, and then there's an application transport layer, which actually talks about how you move this around. All that information is on page 17. I'm not going to go through that anymore. Again, it's extensible. It has this thing called SASL. I mentioned this earlier. The SASL is a standardized mechanism for framework for adding authentication frameworks or authentication mechanisms. So let's say in the future someone else comes up with some sort of whiz-bang way of distributed authentication, you don't actually have to go upgrade the entire protocol to do that. We can just add in new things to SASL. XML itself, which is the lingua franca of the internet, essentially, almost every protocol these days is done in XML. XML itself is very extensible. And then we also have this other thing in there called SNAFTR, which uses a straightforward, it's called straightforward NAFTR records. And that allows us to add transfer for other needs. The current status of the group is the CRISP working group is actually, the IRIS protocol, the core protocol, and the domain registry and the deep transport through last call and now before the IESG. We also do have some open source tools available. You can see at the URL on page 19. We have a couple of clients and a couple of servers sitting out there. And then there's more to come. We're still refining things. One of the things we're looking at now is a new transport called Iris Lightweight, which is essentially doing this over UDP. And what that does is that allows faster transaction. So you're, one of the problems is the kernel effect is state, even when the protocol above it is stateless. UDP does not have this issue. I mean, there are a couple of other limitations to UDP, but potentially what we're trying to do is we're trying to work out how to get around certain problems, do this over UDP and make it much faster. On top of that, we're looking at a data domain availability check, which is just, essentially just a scaled-down version of DREG. And what that would do is that would allow registry or registrar to have a very fast domain availability check that's publicly available. And they could even set that aside thanks to SNAP. They can actually put it on different machines that have different SLAs than the ones that do the standard set of data. And that's it. I'm done. Are there any questions?
This is David Maher. How will this be implemented? Is it planned that when the IRIS is approved that all existing WHOIS data will be changed over, or what is the plan?
That would be dependent on the constituency, right? That's, the IETF just creates the specification and kind of helps foster it, but getting the people who operate the different servers to actually switch over, that's really up to the policymakers.
And I think part of our goal here is to try to demonstrate that this is, in fact, a tool that could actually meet the needs that policymakers and various constituencies have expressed so that it'll be an attractive tool to use. The actual plan for deployment, though, is an operational question.
Do you have any estimate on the cost to a particular registrar or registry?
Cost to a particular... Well, essentially the protocol is just a... It's just a front end of their existing systems, right? So they don't really, there's not a whole lot involved in setting one of these things up. They just have to put, they don't have to re-engineer their database or their business processes, which is actually a really expensive thing to have to do. All they do is this XML interface in front of their current system, and that's it, and it's a pretty thin layer. There's far more logic that goes into understanding the data storage layer and the business rules behind that than there is to serving up XML. So it's fairly low cost.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Barbara, did you want to add anything, or?
I think we lost them.
Yeah, we did. Okay, well, I mean, it's the end of the questions.
I think we would like some input in terms of whether or not this sounds like it actually does address some of the issues that people know they have. I mean, this is not the first time that we've had a discussion with people who are working up sort of policy level perspectives on things, but it would help us to get a reality check.
Well, this is David Maher again. It sounds to me like a really very good tool to accomplish the goals that are being talked about in Task Force 1 and Task Force 2. The concept of tiered access, which seems to have various meanings. But as I understand this proposal for IRIS, it really does allow different groups to have access to different kinds of information at different times and a way of controlling it, which is exactly what we need.
Right.
Yeah, that was the goal. The working group essentially had a goal set out that it did not define, the protocol itself did not dictate policy. And we carefully looked that over and we think we got it right.
Okay. the RIRs, are they going to adopt this, but, you know?
The RIRs are in fact, what happened, I'll give you some background there. Originally, when the working group was chartered, it was only chartered to look at the main information and create, and there was all some wording in the charter about general applicability to other problems or something like that. Since then, the RIRs have started participating. We actually rechartered the working group to actually explicitly say that we are going to tackle the address registry problem. And I'll note that one of the co-chairs of working group is actually the CTO of APNIC. In addition to that, I'm just today, in fact, I was working with one of the members on the right bank staff about the AREG. AREG is the address registry. And so it's got a couple of other issues that need to be resolved. I don't know if you understand there are four different RIRs, and they have fairly different data models. And so what we're trying to do is we're just trying to make sure that what we put forward is that we'll actually accommodate all four of them. And then there are other issues about navigation. So address registries have a very unique problem as finding, navigating to the correct server, which actually don't exist on the domain registry side so much. What we're doing is we're looking at models for navigating to the correct server for address registries actually are realistic, I guess is another way to put it. We have a lot of ideas, but we're trying to figure out which ideas are the good ones. So
I guess the high order bits are that they think this may actually solve some of the problems to the extent that they're actually coming and playing within the ITM working group.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So if I might ask, if you were to make some policy changes, well first off, going to Task Force 2, I think it is a third task force?
Yeah, that's accuracy.
Okay. What are the policies that they're trying to come up with, you know, high level?
In a way, both Task Force 1 and Task Force 2 are so interrelated in terms of what data is gathered and how it's used. So it really affects both of them because both task forces are coming to realize that the who is data that's currently collected is useful to different people for different purposes. It's also it's abused, bulk marketing, spam, and so on. And so what both task forces have been trying to do is figure out a way to decide what information is really needed by certain parties. The intellectual property and business constituencies, of course, want to know everything. They want it all the time, but I think they realize that realistically they're not going to get that. The non-commercial constituency is at the other extreme, saying everything should be totally private. Nobody gets any information unless there's a demonstrated need. But I think both task forces are in some ways headed down a middle path that will try to figure out what kind of information is legitimately needed by different constituencies, and then have some way of controlling what they get and how they use it. And this sounds to me like the answer. It's the answer in the technical sense that provides the tool to achieve that goal.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So just to clarify, the task force are actually compromised.
I'm sorry.
The task force are coming to a compromise in the positions of the needs for privacy versus the needs for access.
Neither one has yet begun the work of adopting a consensus statement, and it may not be possible to have a complete consensus, but. I think that is the direction they're heading. It's going to be a compromise.
Well, that sounds good. So I think the working on is, well, I guess you are working on that problem, but the other thing would be how you go about administrating who the right people are. So that's going to be one of the other issues. But the protocol has different mechanisms for being able to handle that. And like I said, in the future, if we come up with something else, we can go ahead and add it in there. But that's the other issue, is how you identify whether someone's law enforcement or whether someone's part of the business constituency or whatnot.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the tools that's clearly needed, and it's part of the discussion of both task forces.
Yes. A lot of just identifying who's who is not a technical issue. It's more of a social issue, I guess. There are technical ways of being able to manage it, but those are all clearly understood, and the protocol supports it. Yes. Any other questions or comments? No technical question. Well, I guess that's it. Thanks everyone for joining, and if you have any questions, you can send me email. My email address is anewton@verisignlabs.com. Leslie@verisignlabs.com. Answer any questions that you may throw at us.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.